Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode of Fat Mascara is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, we all carry around different stressors, big and small. Therapy is a safe space to get those things off your chest. Plus, it can help you develop coping skills that make your life easier. I will give you an example. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me say it to Jess or to a guest, reframe. Well, I learned that technique from a therapist. Here's an example. Now that I'm a freelance writer and podcaster, I get lonely working from home, and I feel like I'm never going to get to collaborate on projects again. And that's the truth. Reframe, I get to choose which projects I work on, so I'm in control of what I work on. And if I want to collaborate more with others, I don't have to ask anyone's permission. I can just do it. See what I did there? That's reframing. If you've been thinking about starting therapy or are looking for someone to help you process things and give you coping skills, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/mascara today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/mascara. Again, BetterHelp.com/mascara. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey everyone, welcome to Fat Mascara. I'm Jess.
I'm Jen. Hi.
Okay, Jen, you did this interview this week. Tell us about who you spoke to.
Yeah, I will. I'm very excited to welcome Krupa Kesslein. She's the founder and chief formulator at KKT Consultants, which will tell you what they do, but they basically formulate clean beauty products for many brands. And she's worked as a cosmetic chemist and formulator for various brands over the years, including traditional brands. But she made the switch to formulating cleaner and greener, which she'll tell us about how that all came about. And so I know, like, you've heard Jess and I talk about, I'm not a fan of fear-mongering.
Nope.
Yeah, when it comes to clean beauty, I feel like it gets weaponized sometimes as like, if we're clean, you're toxic, Shots fired, pew, pew, pew. But my person who is like, the voice of reason has always been Krupa. I've interviewed her many times over the years. She's a great resource of mine because she formulates clean, but she talks about it in this way that doesn't make you feel bad if you're not ready to go there. But like, she's willing to really explain why she does what she does. And that's why I thought it would be appropriate to have her on for like, it's a little Earth Month. I mean, every month should be Earth Month, right? But
yeah, but I think this is going to answer a lot of questions that people have, whether they say that or it's in the back of their mind. It's like, every brand talks about clean and green, but it's like, now, like, what does it mean?
Yes. And to your point, I did reach out to the fam and ask them for some of their questions for clean cosmetic chemists. So this is Ask Your Cosmetic Chemist, the clean, quote marks, edition, which I think should be really educational for everybody. And she's great. So I hope you enjoy it. Let's get into it. Okay, Krupa, hi. Welcome to Fat Mascara. How are you?
I'm good, Jen. Thank you.
This is so fun. I feel like I've interviewed you so many times over the years, and I don't know why I was waiting to bring you on and introduce you to the Fat Mascara family, because I know they have questions for you. In fact, after we learn a little bit about you, I do have some questions from our listeners, so I hope you're ready for that.
I am very ready, and I am so privileged to be here, and I cannot wait to get into it. I know we've done this a lot of times over the years, but I'm ready to do this on air. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give you even more questions than I usually do. But first, just so people get to know you a little bit more, obviously you're a cosmetic chemist, but what is KKT Consultants? That's your company, right?
Yes, that's my consulting firm.
What do you do?
So we are a product development consulting firm with an in-house formulation lab. So it means that we help brands develop custom formulas and also help them with several aspects of product development, like defining ingredient policies or sourcing and developing new technologies, connecting them with the right contract manufacturers, product positioning, strategizing their portfolio, and a lot of different fun things, anything related to product, basically. But we really excel in coming up with innovation and new technologies in our in-house lab.
But what makes you different, I think, is also all clean, quote unquote clean.
Correct.
Which we will talk about.
Yes.
But that's your niche, right?
Absolutely. Yes, that's our niche. Whenever we get into our background, I'll tell you how I got into clean.
Tell me your background. Yes. How did you get into clean?
Okay. So it's a very interesting journey. I've had a very interesting journey because originally I went to school for biotechnology and like biology, not necessarily chemistry. And I did not think that cosmetics was the career that I wanted to go after. But while I was pursuing my master's, I got an internship at Estee Lauder in their research and development lab. And that's how my entire career started. But then right after that, I started a position with this large multinational consumer goods company in their cosmetic sector as part of their technical assurance team. And one of my first projects was to switch over from shark-derived squalene to olive squalene, right? And up until then, I had no idea that we were all using products that might have things derived from sharks or who knows what else. And we had no idea.
Yeah. What year was this about? Just so people have an idea when this was still prevalent.
2009.
Okay. So not that long ago.
Yeah. Not that long ago. And me being a lifelong vegetarian, growing up with like Ayurveda around me, this was a big eye-opener. And I started looking closer to other raw materials that I was using and discovering questionable safety data on some of these materials. And I was just not happy sharing the gratis that I used to get from work with my family anymore. And it just didn't sit well with me. And I decided then that I really wanted to be a part of something that I can be proud of. And at that time, which is now called the clean sector, there was no clean back then, right? It was coined now, but I decided to be a part of the natural and organic cosmetic sector, which was quite big back mm-hmm. then.
I have to push you a little on this because I know you can handle it. This is where people get confused because you mentioned I was questioning some of the health data. No one's going to question you don't want to be killing sharks either. That's like an easy one. That's pretty obvious. But as a broader thing, what does clean mean to you before we get into maybe some of those health concerns that people might have about certain ingredients? Like, how do you define it these days? Because it's not regulated, right?
Yeah, it's not regulated. And I get asked this question all the time that like, you know, how do you define clean? Well, to me, in an ideal world, clean should mean something that is safe for you and safe for the environment now, as well as long term. But what happens is there's not most of these ingredients that we work with in cosmetics, there's not enough evidence to prove otherwise, right? So there's no long-term safety data, there's no long-term safety studies, especially safety in use studies, as well as ecotoxicity studies done to determine safety of some of these materials. So to me, I think an easier approach to clean is being transparent and coming out clean.
Mm-hmm.
Just letting people know what you are all about as a brand and putting it all out there. Like, here's why we use certain things and here's why we don't.
And if there's none of this long-term data, is that because companies don't want to pay for it, or more that these are new ingredients that just haven't been around long enough to figure these things out?
There's multitude of things. There's all of those things too that you mentioned, right? They're expensive tests. They are not a requirement, so people don't usually want to do them. But at the same time, there's no test methods even approved. So like, there's no one test that like somebody has evaluated and said, okay, you know what? If you perform this test, it'll mean that you won't have any long-term issue. Especially now that we're like moving away from animal testing. It's so hard to approve a test method that does not use animals and human trials that will make sure that some of these chemicals are going to be fine long term. And same with ecotoxicity. Like, it's very hard to come up with, and nobody has come up with that one test method that'll tell us, okay, this is biodegradable for sure, or this is not ecotoxic.
And ecotoxicity, just so people know what that means bad for the environment. That's not the health human concern side of it is one thing. And then that ecotoxicity is like, will this harm the environment in the long term? Is that what
exactly
you're saying?
And environment can be anything. Environment can be reefs, can be aquatic life, can be the soil. Ecotoxicity can mean like everything around us in general, right? But yeah, it's very hard to test for all of those things.
So if it's hard and there's not one test, if you're a layperson and you hear that all the scientists were reviewing data over in Europe and decided to add this new particular ingredient to their list of banned ingredients, perhaps it's a fragrance allergen. I don't know. Let's just, or an endocrine, it has some endocrine disrupting qualities, but we're not sure. So at an abundance of caution, let's take it off. If you're a consumer and you hear that happened in Europe and you see that there's products that still have it here in the US, what are you to think?
So yes, I think that it is very easy to conclude that maybe something was banned in the EU, it's still here, so things are not safe. You have to understand that the regulatory framework of EU and the US is very different. And when EU bans something out of abundance of caution, the US might not follow suit, because the US in most times takes a risk-based approach, right? So even though we don't outright ban anything, the government or the FDA puts definite percentages or concentration levels on things that have serious health impacts. So I think if you are somebody who agrees with what EU is doing and you are an individual who doesn't want to expose your family to something that could be questionable, yes, I understand. I think you should follow EU standards, but it's not that straightforward in the US.
What about you? You said, oh, I got free products and I didn't want to give them to my family because I was worried. What were you worried about? Like, what kinds of ingredients started you on this path towards moving towards clean formulation?
There were a lot of different things. Like, back then, there were formaldehyde releasing preservation systems. So there was silica, but the silica is fine, but silicon dioxide, especially when you're working with it, like in a lab or in the manufacturing environment, there are certain precautions that you need to take while working with it. And if you know me, you'll know that I don't like that. Like, that's not me. I don't understand why we need to work with things that we shouldn't be working with.
So if the chemists themselves are wearing like a full ventilation suit to formulate.
Exactly, right? Like,
okay.
Like, pregnant women are not allowed to go anywhere near the facility when they're manufacturing certain things. I mean, come on.
Those are going to be on your personal no-no list.
Exactly. Like, I don't understand why, right? Like, why? Especially because if there's an alternate way to do things, why not? And maybe this is because I come from a third world country that I don't understand the importance of having that just right consistency in a moisturizer that I need to use a microplastic for or something, you know?
Yeah. You're like, I can do this a better way.
Yeah.
So now, after, you know, some of those ingredients, like I mean, there are still products that release formaldehyde that we don't know about because they might get combined with something else and that happens, but some of that's changed. But now here we are where even retailers have their own no-no lists. Some brands have a different no-no list. The EU has its banned ingredient list. How do you select which ingredients to use or not to use based on your client's requests, based on some in-house KKT no-no list? How do you decide?
We don't have an in-house no-no list, thankfully.
Okay.
But what happens? So we have a very different approach to formulation. And what we do is, before we take on a new client, we have a meeting with them and we really try to understand what their motivations are behind saying no to certain ingredients. So we help them really understand, like, okay, we know what the data says. You know what you want to be as a brand and what you want to stand for. And let's together come up with a restricted substance list that makes sense for you and what you're trying to convey. So instead of like having brands just fit into a no-no list, like, oh, we want to fit into the Sephora no-no list or the Credo no-no list, right? We really push our brands to understand why. Like, why? Why are you avoiding silicones? Do you even know why? And does it even make sense for you to avoid silicones? What is more important to you? Is environmental toxicity important, or is animal testing important, or is like what's important? And then based on that conversation, we help them understand what to avoid and what they can be okay with.
I mean, that's super smart. And in a perfect world, that's amazing. But I'm sure you recognize that lots of people want to sell their products in certain retailers. And they're like, I've heard this from founders off the record. They're like, yeah, I have no problem with silicone, but like so-and-so retailer doesn't allow it. So I'm taking it out. And then nobody ever takes the time to educate the consumer as to why that isn't. And then it perpetuates this weird cycle of people thinking things are demonized, certain ingredients, when maybe not health concerns, maybe there's an environmental concern, but they never get to figure out why. Does that ever concern you, how much power the retailers have over the ingredient list these days?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it should be that way. For sure, I think that brands should be the one deciding what they want to use and what they don't want to use, you know? I understand the retailer side of things too, where they want to It's very helpful for a consumer. Like, I feel for the consumer who doesn't know to read the ingredient lists all day long and check and double check and triple check to make sure that they are not buying anything.
Yeah, Cripple, we don't have time. We want you to do that for us.
Right. And so like just going to a retailer, you know that they've vetted everything and that it makes it very easy. So I understand why, like what the motivations of those RSLs are for retailers. But at the same time, yes, it does restrict brands. But then that is the whole, like, that's where we need more education, and that's where we need more collaboration, and that's where we need more dialogue on, like, okay, what makes sense here? And I've had that before. I have had that before. With clients and retailers, you know, where, like, I've seen retailers collaborate with brands and kind of meet in the middle, because what we were trying to say made sense, you know? So it's not impossible. I think that it's an opportunity for a dialogue.
Are those lists always changing? Have you found that like a retailer or brand, I feel like sometimes I'd never check up afterwards after I see like, oh, here's their no-no list or their banned list. Will certain brands, once they're educated, maybe change their mind on some of those ingredients? Or would certain products or retailers, based on having a conversation like that with you?
Yes, absolutely. The RSLs, which no-no lists, they are constantly changing, constantly evolving, because the data is evolving, the science is evolving.
Is there an example? I know I don't want to get into every specific, but of an ingredient that was like 5 years ago on every RSL restricted use, I just call them no-no lists.
Yes.
And now it's like, oh, it's not maybe not as bad as everybody thought it was. I don't know. Are there any ingredients like that that you can think of?
That used to be on lists and they are not anymore?
Or does it go the other way? Like they weren't on a list and now they're on a list.
I don't know. I feel like there are quite a few categories like that. I remember a few years ago, Credo used to ban ethoxylates completely. And then now, because after I think realizing that it's so very hard for brands and for everybody to keep track of ethoxylated ingredients because they pop up everywhere. There's new ingredients all the time, and suppliers are not going to be upfront with the information that you have to like dig and dig and dig and dig for days to even come close to finding out, okay, is this an ethoxylated ingredient or not? They've kind of backed up a little, you know, backed away a little bit from completely banning ethoxylates. And they have restrictions on the 1,4-dioxane levels and ethylene oxide levels and testing requirements and things like that in order to make sure that they support brands in formulating good products.
And that particular ingredient, like that's not something that would show up on an ingredient label. It's used to process particular ingredients, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're talking about. So even if your ingredient label doesn't show that particular chemical name, you would have to go like back in MSDS sheets and whatever and trace down to the supplier to find out when they were give me an example. They were extracting this fragrance and they had to put the solvent in. I don't know. How does it work? Like, how would that end up in an ingredient without realizing?
So ethoxylated ingredients is basically anything that uses ethylene oxide, right, in processing. So ethylene oxide is carcinogen. And because of that processing, also what happens is there's a residual 1,4-dioxane level that you don't want to be exposed to. So the reason why ethoxylates get the bad rep is because of the residual EO and the residual 1,4-dioxane.
Trace from when it was processed.
Exactly.
Not because a company like wanted to put it in.
No. Trace levels, like parts per million, parts per billion, like very, very, very small level. But continuous exposure to these, in even if it's parts per billion, can lead to something more in the future. But mm-hmm. at the same time, if you look at like the chemistry of ethoxylates were originally designed as the milder version of sulfates, like milder version of like detergents. So most ethoxylated surfactants were the answer to the harsher detergents that we don't use anymore. So to be able to, like, for me to formulate a really amazing clean shampoo and conditioner without any ethoxylates is like, it's impossible right now because there's no other alternatives.
So it's almost like I'll go back to the traditional surfactants people didn't want because then I'll win on the ethoxylate argument, but I lose on the surfactant argument.
Exactly.
And so you're constantly with your clients and with retailers making these adjustments to the way you formulate, it sounds like.
Yeah.
I know. So but like you could see why a consumer wishes like, just give me the list and be done with it. Science doesn't work like that, does it?
No. But I mean, come on. I think even RSL, like even the no-no lists nowadays are so complicated to follow. I don't know how are they okay with just, you know, like, oh yeah, here, avoid all of these 15 categories of ingredients. You're like, wait, you know, I'm sure it's hard.
I don't know either. I've taken, I'm so horrible. I'm just like, I don't know. I'll just not care about it at all because the minute you start to care, then your brain explodes because, well, I'll take this, but then I'm going to go outside and stand behind a bus with like toxic fumes spewing on my face. I had all this clean makeup on, but like the bus just backfired on my face and it ruined everything. So like, why do I, you know what? You can see why people get to that point where they're like, I give up.
Yes. No, I totally understand. But you know, Jen, what I've noticed in most consumers, even my friends and everybody, is like, they're fine. They're okay. They don't really care. Like whatever. They try to shop at like a Credo and try to shop at Beauty Heroes. They're not going to make a thing out of it until they get pregnant and they have a baby. And then they're like, wait, yeah. No.
Or a particular health concern. You know, they've been diagnosed with something and all of a sudden they start rethinking everything they've done their whole life. Even if, you know, say they got an endocrine related cancer that had nothing to, it might have had to do with cosmetics, but maybe had nothing to do. You question everything because we like to think there's a reason, right? Like for some of the bad things that happen.
Yes, absolutely right.
The thing where I do actually really have a lot of concerns is, of course, environmental. And I know a lot of that has to do with packaging. But a reason I do try and talk to people like you and seek out some clean products is because I think they tend to be better for the environment. But I don't know if I'm right about that. Do beauty products that are considered clean tend to be in better for the environment? Because some brands do it more based on human health concerns. And for someone like me who's worried about environmental health concerns. If I shop at a Credo or clean at Sephora, or, you know, am I better for the environment?
That's a great question, Jen. Of course. It's a fantastic question.
It's a complicated one.
It's a very complicated one. Let's see. Compared to a product that you might get in, like, let's say Walmart or wherever else, a drugstore versus Credo, I think, yeah, you're going to find something that's better for the environment at Credo. But then again, does it for sure, doesn't not harm the environment at all? No, that's not true. Is all clean beauty great for the environment? No, that's not true. There's this debate right now where people are saying, wait, we've been going crazy for organic, right? There's like organic agriculture. But if you really look into organic agriculture, it's not good for the environment. Certified organic is not good for the environment because you use more water, you use more resources, you use more land, you get less yield. You get all of those things for this one organic almond oil or whatever oil, right? And so this whole thing of clean beauty, it's so much more complicated. Like there's so many ingredients that have issues with environmental persistence and toxicity and, you know, and long-term toxicity. And even like there's ingredients that brands sell as biodegradable, when biodegradable can mean biodegradable in 2 years or biodegradable in 10 years or biodegradable only in a certain pH range, or it can mean whatever. And do all of these retailers keep a tab on those? No, they can't. They can't possibly.
It's like you have to pick your concern. Like if I'm like, no, because if I'm like, water preservation is the most important to me, maybe based on where I live or whatever, like then you might not want an organic farm. But yeah. If, you know, heavy metals in soil is the concern that I'm most concerned about, then yes, I do want organic. Like there's no generic scorecard, is there?
Unfortunately not.
Okay, you need to work on that. I mean, I don't know what data model that would be to, like, you know, like they do your carbon footprint score, which it takes into account shipping and the weight of the products, but then maybe it didn't take into account the fertilizers used in whatever botanical.
Yeah.
So, like, I get it. Summer is fast approaching, which means it's shapewear season. Just kidding. It's really wedding season. But I just got an invitation to a wedding in Philadelphia, and guess what I'll be wearing? Honey Love. I'm not sure about the rest of the outfit or the dress, but the shapewear is going to be Honey Love. Here's why. Honey Love has revolutionized compression technology so you no longer have to feel like you're suffocating when you're wearing shapewear. Plus, they have lingerie-inspired design details that you'll want to show off, and all their fabrics are breathable to keep you nice and cool, which is perfect for hot days. Let me tell you a story. I remember being at a wedding, this was a few years ago, pre-Honeylove, and I wore a jumpsuit, and I wasn't sure if the bathroom door locked well, but I had to take off the entire jumpsuit and then roll down the shapewear to pee, and I was like holding onto the back of the door at the same time, completely naked in the bathroom, and it took so long, and I caused this whole backup of the bathroom line, and after that, I was like, never again. Until Honeylove came along. Honeylove Superpower Shorts have a 100% cotton gusset, so you don't have to wear underwear underneath. And there's a convenient opening in the underwear area, so you don't have to take off the whole thing to go to the bathroom. It's so easy. Honeylove products make you look good and feel good. Whether it's for a wedding, event, an everyday boost of confidence, Honeylove is the perfect plus one. Treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/mascara. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. That's honeylove.com/mascara. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. honeylove.com/mascara for 20% off. The summer vibes are just getting started, so shape your life with Honeylove. Hey everyone, it's Jen, and I have decided this is going to be the summer of uniform dressing. I'm going to have a few pieces on heavy rotation, and I'm telling you right now, they're all going to be linen, and they're all going to be from Quince. I don't know why I'm going so hard on linen right now, but it just feels right. And Quince specializes in timeless pieces made of premium fabric, and the best part is that all the Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. I am personally very into the 100% European linen pants. They're cropped and easy. There's even a cute pinstriped version. And when I wear them, I look like I just stepped off a yacht. Do I have a yacht? No. Do I know what yachters wear? No, but that's the vibe. The linen pants come in sizes extra small to 3X, and they're less than $40. Okay, like 10 cents less. They're $39.90. But the quality is excellent, and they wash really well. How does Quince do it? They cut out the cost of the middleman and pass the savings on to us. Plus, Quince works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/fatmascara for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com, Q-U-I-N-C-E, quince.com/fatmascara to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/fatmascara.
Okay, everyone, I am one of those people who, when it comes to wellness, sorry, but it's got to fit into the pockets of my day. 5 minutes here, 7 minutes there, when I'm like in the kitchen and I'm microwaving something long, it's got to be convenient. And that is why Alo Moves works for me. My mindset has changed. The app makes it easy for me to keep my wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place and bite-sized little bits. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, self-care tips, healthy recipes, so much more. From beginner to advanced, Alo Moves has the flow or class that's going to fit into your schedule. Their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour, depending on what you're feeling that day.
You know what feeling I'm feeling most days? I'm feeling 10 minutes. I've been doing Joanna Thompson's. Right, that's about it.
Yeah, that's good.
10 minutes. Joanna Thompson does these yoga lattes in 10. One day will be abs. One day will be arms. Today, Jess, is booty day. And we're just going to get it done all in 10 minutes. If you're trying to get a good sweat, then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like the sweat-inducing yoga flows or the reformer Pilates workouts without weights. You can also find stress relief with meditations, affirmations, face yoga, gua sha, learn to do dry brushing. How many times have we talked about dry brushing on this podcast? Alo Moves will teach you how to do it.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Alo Moves. Go to alomoves.com now and use the code MASCARA20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership. That's alomoves.com, code MASCARA20. alomoves.com, code MASCARA20.
How about this? Also important to me and you, I know, is animal welfare.
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Just in general, are most of the clean formulas, can we consider those to be more animal friendly than traditional cosmetics?
Most clean brands right now not just clean, actually, any brands that sell in the US, they don't test on animals. Most brands have phased out of animal testing completely.
Okay, so this is my savvy listeners always are pointing out to me that they, before China changed its regulations, were like, listen, I know that you are animal safe. However, I know your parent company also sells in China where animal testing was required on all cosmetics for a while. What's going on there now? Like if you see a brand that's sold in China and also sold in the US, and you're very adamant about wanting to be, you know, pay attention to animal welfare, can you feel okay about buying it? What's the state of regulations these days?
No, China lifted its ban on animal testing, making all general cosmetics exempt from animal testing, imported as well as domestically made, all cosmetics. But they have these two categories of cosmetics called general cosmetics and special cosmetics, right? So general cosmetics are basically all like shampoo, conditioner, all these like normal cosmetics, but then special cosmetics are cosmetics that have a very specific claim, like a dandruff shampoo or an eczema balm, or, you know, kind of like the same way, or sunscreen.
OTC drug claim. Okay. The US equivalent.
Those are special cosmetics, and those are not exempt from animal testing yet.
Okay. So here's where it gets tricky. Say this brand that you love sells their foundation with SPF in China. That means that makeup had to be tested on an animal, right? Because it has a sunscreen claim.
Yes, 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 absolutely. But so even animal testing is not straightforward, because nothing is straightforward, right? So
of course,
even animal testing is not straightforward. Like there are so many other nuances. Like, for example, we all know that EU banned animal testing. But then there's Are you familiar with REACH? Like there's a unit where it's called REACH. It's an acronym for registration of new materials, like new chemicals. So whenever you have a newer chemical or new material, you send it to REACH for approval. Well, REACH, mm-hmm. one of the things that they do is animal testing to approve the new chemical.
Because this is something that's never before been used in cosmetics, so yeah. we kind of have to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
So like it's a new retinol alternative that we just invented.
Yeah.
And maybe it's even a cleaner version of a particular ingredient, that bakuchiol.
Yeah.
That had to be tested on an animal to even get on the cosmetics list. And that would be a one-time testing, right?
It's a one-time testing.
And that's for the raw material, not every finished product made with it.
Yes. So it's only for the raw material.
I'm not trying to justify. I'm just trying to make sure people understand. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely. And it only happens in certain cases. But the point is that it could be one of the requirements. Like REACH can determine whether animal testing is required or not. But it's still part of their protocol is what I'm saying. So it's contradictory. Mm. And then get this, Jen, because you brought up animal testing. This is one of my things that I'm like, it's my pet peeves right now. The sexual lubricants.
Mm-hmm.
All sexual lubricants in the United States have to undergo animal testing in the United States.
And is that because of how they are regulated? Are
yes.
they regulated as medical
devices?
Okay.
Yeah. So no matter what the lube, right? Even if it's just like coconut oil or like whatever, if you're calling it a sexual lube and selling it as sexual lube, that means it's a medical device and you have to do testing on animals.
Well, now, don't some brands get around this? I've talked to some of these companies, and they call it a personal lubricant or a moisturizer.
Yeah.
So as not to imply that it would be used in the vagina, just on the vulva or whatever,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is a joke, because let's be honest, if you're putting it on your vulva,
exactly.
it's going to get inside of your body at some
exactly.
point. But that's their way around that, I imagine.
Yeah, that's their way around it until FDA comes back and then fines them for whatever, right? Because it's not right to sell a love massage oil, or I don't know whatever they call it, right? And then
yeah.
we all know it's a sexual lubricant.
They'll, if they want to continue to sell it, they would then have to do animal testing as if it were a vaccine or a drug or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay, so we need to petition the FDA to change
Correct.
That.
Yes,
got
please.
It. All right, we're on it.
Okay.
We're mobilized. The Fat Mascara fam is, because you can find, I guess you could look at, you as a chemist could look at the ingredients in a particular lubricant mm-hmm. and say, none of these are things that we should have concerns about that require an animal to be harmed in order to test them. I mean, like you said, coconut oil or whatever.
Yeah. And I think there should be more funding and more research into finding alternate methods for these tests. Like, we have evolved so much from a tissue culture, or like there's ridiculous technologies available now. So why can't we move away from animal testing for things like that?
Like grow some fake skin in the lab and put it on that
yeah.
instead of on this mouse. I get it. I would like to move into the portion of the interview where I actually ask some listeners to tell me their questions for you. So I hope you don't mind. I do have a couple specific questions. One that comes up all the time actually on this show and people are just curious about is fragrance in skincare. I've even talked to founders who are like, I like fragrance in skincare, but you know, the internet does not. So mm-hmm. I don't put fragrances in. So this was the question. Why do some companies choose to, well, this is a loaded question, heavily fragrance products for the face? I guess this particular listener does not like fragrance in their skincare, but it is a good question. Why would you put fragrance in skincare, or why wouldn't you?
Yeah. So the simple answer is that when you make moisturizer, let's say I'm making a moisturizer, if the moisturizer has a particular smell, like a base note, I have to find a way to cover up that smell. A lot of times, that's when fragrance is...
Explain the smell to me. What smell are you talking about? It came out of your lab before you dealt with any masking fragrances. What might it smell like?
It can smell like detergent sometimes. It can smell like
okay.
plastic. It can smell like yogurt, depending on what it is.
And these are even clean formulas that you yourself worked on, know everything that's in them, and it has this weird plasticky smell.
Yes, absolutely.
And consumer perception would be like, ew.
Exactly. So I'm pretty sure people would not put something. People would not use something that smells like sour cream or yogurt on their face every day, right? So I have to put a fragrance in. Yeah, I wouldn't heavily fragrance it, but I would put enough fragrance to cover up that smell.
Yeah. And so that gets into the difference of like a masking fragrance or neutralizing fragrance mm-hmm. rather than just like, oh, it smelled completely neutral. And then we just decided to put a whole dose of perfume, which does happen as well. Like, you know, a lot of those French pharmacy brands have a heritage of like
yes.
heavily fragranced skincare, I think. I don't mind it, but I know people do. Okay. Speaking of smell, Candace, I think, was the listener on this one. She asked why some products smell like, quote, old plastic pool toys. Thank you, Candace, for the visual of the, or the scent visual. What is she talking? What is that smell? I think I know what she means.
Yes. The fantastic question by Candace, must say. But basically, a lot of times, most of these moisturizers or serums or gels or whatever are made from polymers. Polymers is the same as like plastic is a polymer, right? So I'm not very surprised to hear that products, especially products that don't have that added fragrance, the masking fragrance or the neutralizing fragrance, then will end up smelling like pool toys because of the polymers.
Okay. So if you're one of these people that's like, I don't want fragrance because maybe I have an allergy or I don't even know what allergy I have, I just don't want it, you might have to deal with plastic pool toys.
Yeah, unfortunately so.
Okay, another listener, Anya, said she wants to talk about vitamin C. People are obsessed with vitamin C these days. She wanted to know, what is your favorite form of vitamin C? And can you ever have too much vitamin C in a serum?
Mm-hmm. So my current favorite form of vitamin C is the 3-O-ethyl ascorbic acid, which is an etherified derivative of ascorbic acid, which means it has an ethyl group bound to the ascorbic acid, which makes it more stable. It also makes it soluble in oil and water both. So I love it because I can use it in very many different ways. I normally prefer personally to a concentration of around 5%, I think is enough. Like that's more than you need. But people have used up to 30%. Anything more than 30% is not recommended because it can cause more harm than good. So I think between 20 to 30% if you really want a whole bunch of vitamin C.
That particular form that you said, though, you can't seek that out on an IL. Like, it's not listed that way. I wouldn't know that it was that ester, right? Or does it have a special name on the ingredient label?
It is usually listed as ethyl ascorbic acid or even...
It does have that, mm-hmm, yeah.
Or even 3-O ethyl ascorbic acid most of the times on the ingredient list.
Okay, because I think the... what you see most often is probably ascorbic acid just by itself, right?
Yes.
And that means that that might not be as stabilized as the form that you are currently loving.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Oh, sorry, Anya, follow-up. Can you recommend your... What do you use a vitamin C? What do you use?
I do use a vitamin C. I'm using... Which one am I using right now? Eliza Skin. They have a vitamin C.
I've heard about...
Mm-hmm. That's the one I'm using right now.
I also want to ask you about some of your other personal favorites. And I promise this doesn't mean we know you work with lots of clients. So I'm just going to tell all your clients and potential clients out there, this doesn't mean she doesn't use your product, but I do want to know some favorites of your beauty products and what you actually use. What do you like wash your face with these days? And by the way, you do mostly skincare formulation, correct?
I do skincare. We're also getting a lot into sexual wellness and hair care and baby care, body care, a lot of those categories as well. But skincare is my favorite. I love skincare.
So what cleansers do you like?
So I am a fan of cleansing balms. I don't like to expose my skin to surfactants. So I don't use gel cleansers or any of those. But I will use a cream cleanser, like a really creamy cleanser, or which doesn't really suds, right? Those kinds of cleansers. And then cleansing balms. I love cleansing balms. Right now, I'm using the one by Glow Recipe. It smells delicious. I think it's like a tropical like smell, and I love it. That's the one I'm using right now.
Well, now I have to ask, you don't use surfactants. Is that because of the trace contamination we talked about, or because your skin type, you don't like the drying, or like why do you personally not use them?
I have very dry skin, which is why I don't use surfactant-based products. It has nothing to do with trace amounts of anything. It's just my skin doesn't like the drying surfactants.
I totally get it. What about for hair care? What are some hair care products that you use?
For hair care is tricky because it depends on how I'm going to wear my hair is what I'll use. So,
of course, of course.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
Let's see. I'm using Innersense. I'm using a few like DS Labs products. I'm using Ranavat.
What's DS Labs? Oh, Ranavat, I know, but what's DS Labs?
That's a dermatologist brand, and we are developing some new products for them. So we're just testing them out. But it's more like a clinical hair care brand. I use a lot of hair oils. I like to do like hair oiling before I wash.
What's your oil of choice?
I do coconut oil. That's like forever.
It's classic.
Great. So I use like the Kopari coconut oil the best because it's like not liquid. So it's very easy to put on.
Less mess with the oiling, yes.
Exactly. But yeah, that's what I do.
What about any other moisturizers or skincare? You mentioned you have dry skin.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like to put on?
So I like to use an oil-based moisturizer, like a balm in the shower. So this, I've done this like forever now. But what I do is I wash my face with a cleansing balm, right? And then when I get in the shower, I'll put, like after I'm done with everything, I'm ready, I'm like almost ready to get out, I'll put a balm on my face and then kind of just wipe off the rest with a towel when I get out. And I use Blue Cocoon by May Lindstrom all the time because I love Blue Tansy. It's my like favorite product and favorite ingredient, and I love it. So that's the one I use. And then...
Why do you love Blue Tansy so much?
Why?
Yeah, what can Blue Tansy do for me? I don't do Blue Tansy.
Blue Tansy is amazing, and it is a chamomile, so it's very relaxing, and I think I find it very intoxicating, the smell. I just love it.
So it's part experiential, and then skin benefit-wise, I imagine, does it have skin benefits as well?
It does have skin benefits too, yes. It has a bunch of really great terpenes. It has a lot of like relaxing characteristics, like it has great antioxidants as well, but it helps you calm down and relax. So kind of like a neuro ingredient, right? It also helps kind of the aromatherapy part, especially because I apply it in the hot shower. So then my whole shower smells like it. So I love it.
That's lovely. If you're a scent person, are you also like a perfume or candle person?
No.
Do you have any personal favorite? No, not on that. Okay.
Not. I'm not a perfume.
And what about makeup?
Or candle person? Like I feel like I used to be. I used to love perfumes and candles and everything, but then I had a little one and then he has eczema and he has like dermatitis, which flares up. So then...
Just for safety of like, I'm not, because sometimes you don't know what's in a particular fragrance and it could set someone's skin condition off. I get that.
Exactly.
And lastly, before we do the Fat Mascara 5, which I'm not going to let you out of here without, that's our speed round. Any color cosmetics that you're into, any mascara that you particularly love that you cannot live without?
I'm liking the Exa mascara a lot.
Exa?
Exa by Credo. Did I pronounce
okay.
it wrong?
No, I don't know.
It's great. It stays on all day and... stays on after the gym. I like it. I also want to make a special mention to this product that I've been using like crazy. Like I've finished 3 bottles now. It's Peach and Lily's Retinol for All. I don't know if anybody is into retinol or have tried retinol before, but I was somebody who had like I had issues with retinol. Like I would try it and then because I have dry skin, it would just mess it up, right? This particular product, like retinol, is my new thing for sure. And my skin okay. is just absolutely fantastic. No issues with dryness, no issues with sensitivity, like nothing. And I use it every day, like every single night. It's perfect.
Krupa, did you formulate it?
Jen, we're on a podcast here. But call me later.
Okay. I was just like, well, it's okay if you didn't or did, but I'm like, obviously, if you had made it yourself, you would know how to make it, you know, exactly for your own skin. She has proprietary client knowledge that we cannot push her on. That's totally fine. I understand. But Peach and Lily Retinol for All, good even for sensitive and dry skin. That's good to know.
Yeah, I mean, it works really well for me. So if you guys have any like, dry skin and you've always had issues with retinol, then you should give this a try. It's a good one.
Okay. You might have already answered this, but I'm going to move into our little Fat Mascara 5 easy round of questions special for you. But like, what's the most underrated skincare ingredient to formulate with? Like one that you love, but you're like, why doesn't it get more love?
Astaxanthin. I mean, there's a whole list, but I think astaxanthin is one.
Why? Tell us, why do we need astaxanthin in our life?
So astaxanthin is this algae extract, right? It has a ridiculously amazing antioxidant benefits. It has, there's also studies that they've done for sun protection using astaxanthin. I was introduced to it by a brand founder, like I think probably like 7 years ago. And I've been using it ever since in like any which way I can find, like any time I get a chance, I'll use it because it is the best antioxidant. It knocks out like tocopherol and all of those things out of the park. It is like so perfect. And you don't even need much, like a tiny amount goes a long way. And it has a beautiful peachy color. It's great. I love that ingredient.
Amazing. Okay. You heard it here first. What's overrated? Like that everybody seems to want and you're like, why? For skincare ingredient.
People are going to get pissed off about this answer, but whatever. I think vitamin C is a little bit overrated.
That was like one of the first questions people had for you is about vitamin C. Why is it overrated?
Because there's other options. Like you don't only have vitamin C that's going to like this do it all ingredient that you all you need is vitamin C. Like no, like there's other options, you know?
Okay, but vitamin C is both an antioxidant, like you said, right? But it's also this, in certain forms, a brightener.
Yeah.
Are you saying there's better ingredients for each of those things separately? What do you like for a brightening ingredient?
Niacinamide is fantastic. And it's not unstable. Like, vitamin C is unstable. Like, who knows if your bottle is going to even do the same thing in 2 months?
I'm telling you, this is a naming thing. Vitamin C seems easy to understand. We all took like a little Flintstone vitamin when we were little. It makes sense to people. You try and sell them on astaxanthin and niacinamide when vitamin just, you know what I mean? Like in a marketing point of view, it's easy to Google. We need to do a rebrand on these other two ingredients. We could call it vitamin N. If they had just called, right, like vitamin B is panthenol, right? Same thing. Mm-hmm. Should we start calling niacinamide vitamin N or something? Should we like do a rebrand?
Yeah, it's B3 actually. Niacinamide is a vitamin.
Oh, it is a B vitamin.
It's B3, yeah.
So there is science behind
it. It's B3.
I'm like, you know, panthenol, they just call it vitamin B. But it is a vitamin B type of vitamin B. Okay, fine. My plan's not going to work, but okay. Vitamin C, overrated. All right, so I know you're vegetarian. I'm a weekday vegetarian. My stepson's vegetarian. What is the best vegetarian dinner dish?
I love to cook.
I know. This is why I'm asking you.
And one of my favorites right now that I keep going back to is kimchi ramen. I love kimchi ramen. It is the best and so easy to make and perfect and fantastic for a vegetarian dinner dish.
Is miso the base of your soup?
No. So basically you like saute kimchi, like saute it really good so that all the vinegar goes out. And then you add your broth. So your broth is like kimchi. You don't need miso. And then you add like a little bit of gochujang and then.
So when you're adding your broth, is it just water to the sauteed kimchi or you'll use vegetable
bouillon.
Broth? Like better than.
Yeah, better than
whatever,
bouillon.
Vegetable
like just,
bouillon.
Mm-hmm.
But the kimchi gives it the flavor.
The kimchi gives it the flavor. It's so delicious.
And a cabbage kimchi, I'm imagining.
Yeah.
Cabbage, like I'm going to try that.
But you have to cook the kimchi really well.
Yes. I do like sour, but I will cook it well. I will try that tonight. Okay, favorite indulgent snack.
Yeah, I had to give this a little bit of thought, but I think that barbecue chips are the death of me. I can't stop eating barbecue chips. Horrible.
Is there a particular brand?
All brands are fine. As long as they're barbecue chips, I'll eat them.
Got it. Okay. And last question. How do you unwind at the end of the day?
Usually with like one really amazing glass of wine.
Okay. And what is amazing to you? Is there a particular grape, a particular varietal?
Not really. No, I'll have anything. Any
just
red.
Just the good stuff.
Is fine. No, I'm not a snob.
Okay.
Not a wine snob. I'll have anything.
I don't know. You just gave me your kimchi broth recipe. So I was like, maybe she's like, I need this burgundy aged 30 years or whatever it is. I don't know.
No.
Okay, good glass of red wine, and then you can unwind and get your beauty sleep. I love that. Sounds like me too. Krupa, this was so informative. I'm sure our listeners are going to love this episode. Thank you so much for coming on Fat Mascara.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us, or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.